Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. May 28, 2020. What gives the effect of spiritual glue? Question. The essence of the wisdom of Kabbalah is the unity of desires, intentions, thoughts, and souls. What is the main tool that gives the effect of spiritual glue between them? What connects them? Answer. They are connected by our desire, when we in the ten want to be together so much that we feel a mutual yearning, interaction, and mutual thoughts, that is, the manifestation of a completely new feeling of reciprocity that no one had before. It is also not yet spiritual, but it is already the manifestation of a single field that the Creator blesses. And then we will connect more and more closely until in mind, in heart, and in intention, we begin to feel how we want to help each other, to manifest within each other, and to connect with each other. Then, by establishing this network of connection, we will feel that the Creator is there, as if we caught him in this network like a huge dolphin. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 1, 2020. Debunking the myth around Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. From my Facebook page Michael Leitman, May 28, 2020. Today we are celebrating the giving of the Torah. According to tradition, on this day, some 3,400 years ago, the people of Israel stood at the foot of Mount Sinai and received the Torah. Incidentally, it is written that when Moses came down from the mountain with the Torah in his hands, it was written on two tablets. Afterwards, the Torah was written on parchment, then on paper, and finally on tablets again, so in that sense, we went full circle. However, what's really important is what the Torah is and why it was given. It is written that the Creator said, "I have created the evil inclination, I have created the Torah as a spice." In other words, the Torah is something that corrects, improves. The word Torah comes from the word Or, which is Hebrew for light, meaning a force, energy that changes our inclination from evil, self-centered, to good, namely giving. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, every other explanation of the meaning of the Torah is a myth. Another myth concerns the intended recipients of the Torah. The people of Israel who came out of Egypt and received the Torah had descended from Abraham's initial group. Abraham was not a Jew. In his days, there was no Jewish people. Abraham was Babylonian, and he found a way to mend the evil inclination that was spreading across his country, and offered his ideas to anyone who'd listen. The people who liked his ideas and united around him later became known as the people of Israel. When the people of Israel received the light, the correcting force called Torah, they were merely following Abraham's legacy of correcting the ego, the evil inclination. Therefore, the Torah is not for the Jews, it's for everyone, since everyone is egoistic, and everyone needs a force that will correct us, since we clearly can't correct ourselves. And the final myth for this post concerns the way to receive the Torah, the correcting force. According to Kabbalah, receiving the force has nothing to do with Judaism, and everything to do with unity. To receive the Torah, Israel had to unite as one man with one heart. Only after they did this, they received the force of correction for their egos, and once they united, they became the Israeli nation. So anyone who truly wishes to unite with all the people, to bring them all into the heart, will receive that correcting force, and that will be his or her reception of the Torah. Happy Matan Torah to everyone. And suddenly, came a virus and stopped Hollywood. Comment. The whole world has a problem with Hollywood. For several months now the industry has been shut down, movie theaters are vacant, all the money that has been invested is frozen or lost. So, all the superheroes are afraid of this 60-micron virus. 600 shows that were supposed to be produced are now all being put on hold. The Oscars ceremony has been postponed. What is more, Hollywood is facing a dilemma with respect to script writing. Our manner of storytelling will forever change. Everything prior to the pandemic will seem outdated. My reply, naturally. People all over the world have changed a lot. Comment, people used to believe the Hollywood stories, all these soap operas, and TV shows. And suddenly, such a disaster hits that aims them to seek the truth, the essence, something which is quite different. My reply, we have entered a new world. We are already different. Question, so, what would we like to see? I am interested as a producer. What screenplay would appeal to us? What would the world want to see? How will it change Hollywood? Answer, I have never written any scripts. Comment, but you are a great playwright, seriously. My reply, but those are not my ideas. I take them from the sources. Comment, we are living the script of the last generation. My reply, yes. That screenplay is now being implemented. Schwarzenegger can fight for the truth here too. It is a fight against egoism, which is holding us all by the throat, not allowing us to breathe. And until we grab this scrawny old woman by the hand and rip her throat, nothing will change. She will keep pressuring us all the time, again and again. Humanity will have to do it. Comment, so, you believe that such a hero will appear? My reply, there must be a hero. We need a hero. The hero is the creator. But we need that hero to be someone we can love, hate, agree or disagree with, be disillusioned with, only to later realize that it was all him. Him. Question, but do you feel that this hero is moving toward the creator? Do you really think that the time of such a hero is approaching? Answer, we are already in it. I am completely serious. We do not feel this yet because, as usual, we only see things in retrospect. But we are already in it, absolutely. Moreover, it is very clear externally and internally. The first wave of the coronavirus has already passed and all we see now are the remains of it. This wave has passed and we are already thinking and feeling differently. Everything is different. The virus passes through us as we cope with our own sickness. We see the world differently. We do not realize it yet, but the awareness of how much we have changed and how differently we view everything now will come. Thus, the first wave has already passed. Question, do you think that the time of reveling in those soap operas with fights and violence in the movies is gradually passing? Answer, you can even see this in the youth that was still interested in it a mere half a year ago. You can see if they are still interested in it today. I am confident that they no longer are. And the preteens that are growing up will have no interest in it. It would seem to them as an antiquated Hollywood of the last century. Question, you think they will be looking for something beyond this fighting, this violence? Answer, they will be looking for a greater action. And the greater action is already inside. It is not in fighting, not in throwing someone off the 20th floor and he grabs the landing gear of an airplane and flies off. The need will be beyond the mechanical action, beyond the imagery or the framework of this world. It will be internal. Question, internal scrutiny? Answer, yes. Or it could be a war like the coronavirus is fighting against us. And so, our hero gets accustomed to it and travels inside the human body, inside the human society, fighting this virus that wants to smite humanity. And our hero is against it. And then he perhaps begins to realize that he should not be fighting against it because everything that the virus does is good. It was only I who thought that it needed to be destroyed. No. We must help the virus destroy human egoism. It only aims to destroy the ego and not to harm humanity. On the contrary, it is saving humanity. Comment. So, man realizes the positive mission of this virus, which is aimed against human egoism. And if we renounce it? Answer, one suddenly realizes that if not for this virus, we would be headed toward the destruction of our planet. Had the virus not come to us now, we would have surely destroyed it in the very near future. It actually sounds like a great title, and suddenly, came a virus. From CabTV's News with Michael Leitman, April 27, 2020. Medium published my new article, Fake News for a Fake World. The director of the World Health Organization said about COVID-19, fake news spreads faster and more easily than this virus. Indeed, if you're looking for truth in today's world, then the truth is that everybody's lying. Every media outlet warps and manipulates the news according to the agenda of its owner. We can keep avoiding the sincere soul searching that we need to do and go down the path we have been on for decades. But evidently, it won't lead us anywhere good. In the past, when newspapers and television received their funding from subscribers, from people buying actual copies of newspapers, the press was obliged to provide the readers or the viewers with true stories. Today, when the media is owned by media moguls and depends on advertisers for its existence, it is indebted only to them, and honest reporting has become obsolete. The good news, if you can call it that, is that today everyone already knows that everyone is lying. We still consume news from the media, since there is no other source of news, but at least it's with a grain of salt. And speaking of salt, the media today is like the food we eat, big, shiny, and flawless in appearance. But inside, the food is pumped with hormones, steroids, and antibiotics. We all know it, and we all eat it. What else can we do? Here we need to be honest with ourselves. It's true that the media is corrupt, but this hasn't been news for a long time now. So we should ask, where did the journalists come from? Where did they grow up? Where were they educated? Where did they learn to distort and manipulate? They learned it in the same place where we grew up, where we were educated, where we learned to manipulate one another. The media are not more corrupt than the environment that bred them, which is all of us. They are made in our own image. To get truthful news, it's not enough to condemn them. They cannot be better than the public that engendered them. Instead, we need to look at ourselves in the mirror, admit that the people we patronize with our self-righteousness actually do reflect who we are, and ask ourselves if this is the society we want to live in. If we do, then there is nothing to complain about. But if we don't, there is a lot we can do. We can start by learning how we are all connected to each other. Just as one person with the coronavirus can infect dozens of people, if not more, so can our actions and even our thoughts. When ill will toward each other reigns high, people will do bad things to one another, reflecting what they feel inside. But when they feel connected to their communities and countries, when they care about their neighbors, they will not harm them. So the root of the problem that creates bad press is that we ourselves are bad to one another. If we are bad to one another, can we complain that someone else is bad to us? We are reversing JFK's motto, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, and complain when it doesn't work. In principle, we all agree with JFK, but we want everyone else to go first. With this attitude, we will die before anyone does something. The present is the way it is because we have avoided dealing with ourselves, with how we relate to each other, and with what kind of society we are fostering. We can keep avoiding the sincere soul searching that we need to do and go down the path we have been on for decades. But evidently, it won't lead us anywhere good. Alternatively, we can decide that we have to finally get off our couches and start working for each other. It doesn't require radical changes. We don't need to donate our savings, if we have any, and we don't have to sacrifice anything. We only need to look inside ourselves and observe how we relate to one another, because this is where we are really sick. This is the virus we are giving to each other morning, noon, and night. If we want to become different to each other, we will, provided we want it together. This is the idea we need to promote, that together we can build a caring society, whose people are responsible for one another. If we adopt that tiny shift in our mentality, we will see a different world. Together, we can move mountains. Medium published my new article, What Coronaphobia Tells Us About Human Nature. Fear kills. As COVID-19 continues spreading and the appalling death toll in America and the world rises, the fear of the unknown is causing extreme anxiety, coronaphobia. U.S. physicians are worried about additional deaths occurring as a large number of patients with life-threatening conditions have stopped seeking treatment at hospitals because they are afraid of contagion. There is much more to this new phenomenon than it seems. It reflects a fundamental change in human nature, a new perception of social interaction that the pandemic has triggered. We need to become more aware of this change in order to adjust to it properly. Now is the time to realize that we are one interconnected and interdependent humanity and to strive to preserve the sense of integrality that the current crisis has taught us. Our lifestyles and habits have changed dramatically, perhaps forever, as a consequence of the coronavirus. Those with obsessive compulsive disorder now see similar behaviors on a widespread level as people avoid personal contact, handshakes, touching stuff that is not theirs, and constantly wash their hands to prevent contracting the disease. Many are anxious to leave home and expose themselves to the non-sterile outside world unless they have no choice and are equipped with masks and all the necessary protective gear. What manifests on the surface as an irrational fear of the illness is symptomatic of a shift in human perception in life or priorities at a deeper level. Without question, treating the illness should not be delayed or avoided out of fear, but this recent human tendency to turn inward arises for a reason. This huge world upheaval has opened up before our eyes. The epidemic has slowed our pace, forced us to stop and think twice about the relevance of our endless quest for pleasures. We have realized that the obsessive pursuit of indulgence at all cost is our real trap, since as soon as a desire is fulfilled, a new and bigger desire arises. Thus, we have constantly fallen into the same vicious cycle of emptiness and lack of meaning in our lives. In our new reality, sitting at home has started to become a habit, a second nature. What was first perceived as being in prison, trapped in a stressful setup, suddenly feels comfortable and safe. Of course, it is impossible to generalize and say everyone feels this way or relates to it. Nor is there an interest in pushing anyone in that direction, but the trend does indicate that a transformation in the way we relate to and live our lives has occurred. Occupations have also changed compared to previous generations. We are rapidly moving our jobs into the virtual space, an easy way to connect with people without physical and geographic boundaries. Even though we are still used to physical contact, we are increasingly realizing that the benefits of working from home pay off in many ways: more quality time with the family, fewer long and tiring commutes, and financial savings in lower office overhead costs. However, the stage we are now in is not our final destination. The virtual space is only a way station in the transition from existence in the physical world to a more inner, introspective world. The sooner we begin to feel ourselves as an integral part of a global virtual space, the deeper our internal connection will be. That kind of connection refers to the unity of the hearts, which is not measured by the number of physical interactions we have in the corporeal world. In a nutshell, the virtual reality the pandemic has moved us toward is the preparation for the establishment of more internal, integral society, an integral connection. In this new world, we will need to learn to connect above our differences, and create meaningful connections alongside engaging in business and livelihood activities. This is the stage that the human race needs to implement now. We need to grasp the elements and means of this new reality and learn to use them to foster better human relations. Now is the time to realize that we are one interconnected and interdependent humanity and to strive to preserve the sense of integrality that the current crisis has taught us. Our only requirement is to strengthen our inner connection to create an integral society between us that is based on the principle of love covers all crimes, as our sages wrote. Such an environment will dispel all phobias, uncertainty and anxiety about the future. The Times of Israel published my new article Tikkun Olam and the Falsehood of Social Justice. Always around the holiday of Shavuot, aka Feast of Weeks, we Jews discuss the concept of Tikkun Olam, literally correction of the world. The prevailing understanding of Tikkun Olam is that the term speaks of the obligation of Jews to pursue social justice, lead an ethical life, and support equal rights to the underprivileged and minorities. These are all worthy goals, and the right for equality is a given for every human being. Nevertheless, placing the correction of the world on these values guarantees that the world will never be corrected, and below I will explain why. At the foot of Mount Sinai, when the Jews received the Torah, the code of law by which they lived, they received it only because they had met the precondition to be, even if only for that movement, as one man with one heart. That is, for one moment, they were in such absolute love for one another that they became as one person. Subsequently, they received their code of law which was meant to help them maintain that state of mutual love. This is why Rabbi Akiva, whose disciples gave us the texts that form the basis of our nation, taught that the overall rule of the Torah is that one sentence, love your neighbor as yourself. Immediately after Israel received the Torah, they were tasked with passing on what they had achieved. In other words, they became a nation in order to be a light unto nations, spreading unity and mutual love to the rest of the nations. But 2,000 years ago, we fell into such depths of mutual hatred that we did not even need a reason to hate one another. This unfounded hatred brought upon us not only the destruction of the temple and the loss of sovereignty, but also the permanent loathing and contempt of the nations. That loathing, whose root is our unfounded loathing for our brothers, brought upon us countless cataclysms since then, the most catastrophic of which is, of course, the Holocaust. Nevertheless, we do not learn. We do everything to avoid loving one another, and turn instead to surrogates such as social justice and morals. Yet, as we can see, there is no social justice and there is no moral anywhere. Values can't replace mutual love, which is what the nations truly want from us, to shine for them the light of unity. If we loved each other, we would not need to promote social justice, since lovers do not behave unjustly to each other. We would not need to speak of morals, since lovers do not behave immorally toward their loved ones. Ethics would not be an issue since there are no such things as exploitation or mistreatment among people who genuinely care for one another. A mother does not need moral codes when she tends to her baby. Her love directs her and she always works with her child's best interest in mind. Where you find laws, you won't find love. And as if we haven't suffered enough, we still don't want to love each other. We gladly bond with other faiths and practices. But when it comes to loving people of our own nation, we do not even speak of social justice, let alone love. In relating so disparagingly toward our coreligionists, we shun the concept of being a light unto nations. We were, are, and always will be at the center of the world's attention. Subconsciously, people are and always will expect us to project the light of brotherly love to the nations. But what we project is mutual derision and hate. When that is the case, no nation will love us, however hard we try to win its favor. Until we do our duty and cultivate love among ourselves, we will not fulfill the task for which we were given nationhood on the first Shavuot, at the foot of Mount Sinai. And therefore, the nations will not love us. So this year, I propose that we focus less on being morally just and ethical, and more, much more, on loving one another. Let's dare, for once, to rise above our differences, avoid judging and patronizing, condemning and ridiculing. Instead, let's stay who we are and unite above it. Let's at least think about it. After all, Rabbi Akiva did not leave us a legacy of ethics, but a legacy of love, so let's try to do what this teacher of our nation taught, and see what happens. My article in Newsmax, Conspiracy Theories, Chips and Other Explanations. Unusual situations produce unusual explanations. This is very true of the COVID-19 crisis. This is why there probably hasn't been a crisis in recent memory that produced more fake news, conspiracy theories and other scares that no one knows who spread them and whether they are true or false. But whether or not the coronavirus was made in the lab in Wuhan, China, and whether or not it is meant to scare us into agreeing to implant in us a chip that will monitor our every move, those theories all have one major flaw: they ignore the root cause of the virus. In the end, it does not matter who created the virus or for what purpose. What matters is that it is here and it is changing the very fabric of human society. This is something that no human intended to achieve and no human can control. The coronavirus is indeed exposing something, something that my teachers call the recognition of evil, the evil in human nature. The virus shut down all of our systems and sent us to do some thinking. While we were at home, nature thrived and animals began to roam freely where they had not roamed in decades, demonstrating how injurious we have been toward nature. While we were at home, for fear of contracting the virus or infecting our more vulnerable loved ones, brash young demonstrators protested the lockdown by rallying together and carrying signs that said Cuomo protects criminals and Cuomo virus the real threat in New York State. And while the common folk are begging for federal benefits to keep their families and businesses afloat, the tycoons are making hundreds of billions of dollars at everyone else's expense. Even the richer hospitals got twice as much government aid as the poorer hospitals. How does one justify this? If this is not recognition of evil, I don't know what is. There is a good reason that I point out all those examples of human ugliness. The coronavirus did not create them, it only placed a mirror before our eyes so we could see who we are, how we treat one another and how alienated we are from each other. And if this is how we treat each other, it is no wonder that this is also how we treat nature. Is this what we want to go back to? Is this what we want to reopen? After all, this is what we locked down, so when we reopen, this is what will come out. We do need to live. But we need to do it right. By right, I mean that we need to open only businesses that are truly essential and not, as one protester's sign said, all jobs are essential. Essential to whom? To those who want to manipulate us into buying what we don't need. Not every business is essential, and not all jobs are essential. Rather, all people are essential. People whose businesses contribute real value to society, such as food, clothing, healthcare, education, construction and so forth, should be open and stay open. The rest of us should transition to a whole new field of expertise, human education. By human education, I mean learning how to be human, namely humane toward each other. We should learn that we are all dependent on each other, because clearly, at the moment we are unaware of it. We should learn that when we promote values such as mutual consideration, mutual care and concern and accountability toward our communities and cities, we are the first to benefit from this. If we want to have a future, we need to acknowledge that the quality of our future depends on the quality of the society we live in. And if we don't build a good, supportive society for ourselves, who will? Activism is great, as long as it is directed toward uniting society around improving everyone's life and not toward promoting the interests of various pressure groups. In order to solve the problems of society, all factions and elements of society must partake in the process, share their needs, and the society, or its representatives, should decide together on the priorities in allocating resources and efforts to solve them. In today's interdependent society, if one faction remains dissatisfied, it will inevitably bring down the whole society. If we do not understand this now, we will understand it after the second or third wave of the virus. So why not do it now, a million victims earlier? Kabbalistic terms, Masach. Masach, screen, represents the anti-egoistic force that a person gains with the help of the upper light. A person, as if, puts on a screen on his desire and then can work with it in the opposite direction and act kindly toward others and the Creator. He is then able to work for bestowal without receiving any pleasure for his own sake? Question: what is the problem with receiving for your own sake? Answer: by this you separate from the Creator, you stop feeling the upper world and limit yourself only to the sensation of our world. Remark: but this is how the Creator created us. My response: He created us such that from this state we would rise to Him, return to the state of merging with Him. Question: why was this even hidden? Why haven't the sages taught this for the past 1,000 years? Answer: in order to create the illusion of free will in a person. Remark: but if I were taught this at school, I would know that I do not have freedom of choice. My response: you cannot accept these things in your childhood and have them exist in you automatically. You must desire them yourself. There were generations when people were taught this from a young age and they had no problems. But these were the first generations. And now, with our enormous selfishness, we must begin our journey long before the Maxim, before the manifestation of the Creator, before we understand where we are and whom we are dealing with. This is a part of our correction. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 17, 2019. Sweden is trying to integrate retirees and immigrants. Question: they are always conducting experiments in Sweden. Lately, they have decided to settle pensioners with immigrants. Those who came up with the idea believe that it will help elderly people cope with the feeling of loneliness and, at the same time, it will help immigrants integrate in the country and in the new culture. What do you think about this plan? Answer: I think it is a good plan for the mutual destruction of both of them. Question: does this mean that you believe it is impossible to integrate the two groups? Answer: it is impossible to integrate the two groups. Even people who share the same religion, the same values in life, and the same culture that stem from the same nation, people who understand each other without words, cannot live in peace with each other. Here, on the other hand, they are trying to do something that is totally contradictory, as if from another planet. How will they live together? What for? Question: do you believe that the retirees will feel lonelier and the immigrants will be even more distant? Answer: the pensioners will suffer. Both groups will turn into wild beasts. In nature, there is the law of equivalence of form. Mutual closeness is based on resemblance. This means that we get closer to someone to the extent that we resemble him, and we draw away to the extent that we differ. This is the law in simple free space. If you begin to bring people who are different from each other together, shockwaves and imbalance will begin to appear between them until they reach an actual explosion. So why do that? The people who do that do not have any idea what they are dealing with. It will be impossible to erase the shock with money or whiskey. Question: do you think that not even psychology will work here? Answer: no. It will take several generations before these groups of people begin to resemble each other. This means that they will bring about the divisiveness of society and other horrible outcomes. Who would let that happen? Would I send my relatives to live in such conditions? Near immigrants? The immigrants are not to blame for any of this either. They have their own values and their own attitudes toward life, a different perspective and a different mentality. They do not understand Northern Europeans. At best, they come from Southern Europe, Africa, or Asia. This is horrible. Who has come up with such an idea? It shows a total lack of understanding of the laws of nature. Comment: now I understand that this goal will not be achieved. My response: not only will it not be achieved, it will come to states in which the police will have to patrol everywhere there. Question: there is a problem with lonely people in Sweden, especially retirees. What would you do if you had all of the options at your disposal, in order to mitigate the situation a little so they would not be lonely? Answer: the Swedes should engage with other Swedes, that is all. They should take the younger generation or the unemployed, teach them, and then employ them as social workers. Question: and what would you do with the immigrants? This is also a problem in Sweden. How should they integrate them into the society? Answer: they need to put them in intensive, serious study frameworks from morning till evening, for the whole day, study frameworks for the kids, for teens, and for adults. A very large number of people are needed for that. Question: so the problem will not simply be resolved with time? Answer: no, it will not be resolved. There will be new problems such as street gangs, drug abuse, and everything else we see in such situations. It is all due only to the lack of the right approach. From CapTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 13, 2020. Through similarity of properties. Question: the Creator or nature, as one and the same thing, constantly influence us, mostly through material problems. And if I myself want to connect with this force, should I become similar to it according to the law of similarity of properties? Answer: naturally. Question: but I cannot understand through these problems what this force wants from me. For this, do I have to rise to its level? Answer: it is necessary to rise above these problems, to their source. Question: if I became equal to the property of the Creator in some percentage, the property of bestowal, will I understand the design of nature? Answer: yes. As you rise above your desires to the source of your so-called problems, you comprehend him and begin to understand the meaning of his actions. Comment: it is interesting that if we talk about the similarity of properties at the physical level, then equally charged particles repel each other. But there is another example, with a radio receiver that catches waves by the equivalence of properties. And it turns out that the higher the level of nature, the more this law works as if in the opposite way. The Creator is a property of bestowal, we are a property of reception. Does it turn out that I can become like him only through the transformation of intention, while the reception itself remains? My response: you can be the opposite of the Creator. He is the giver, you are the receiver. But if your intentions coincide, then you are together, although you are opposite in actions. Question: do I always remain opposite to him? If he is plus, I am minus, I do not become a plus two? Answer: no. You simply perform the action at the request of the Creator and thus become equal to him, although your action is the opposite. But you do this because you want to coincide with him. Action is not important, what is important is the motive, what we call intention. From CabTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 10, 2020. Attaining the Creator faster. Question: if a person knows that everything comes from the Creator and feels this effect as evil, how can he balance such states? Answer: this is correct. It is very good when a person feels bad in his life and at the same time can say that there is none else besides him, which means that it stems from the Creator. What should he do? He has to change himself so that he will begin to feel good instead of bad, and this is possible. The Creator does not hide from him. He does not play with a person, but is only good to him. In fact, he arranges different states for a person that make it possible to feel the Creator in both good and bad states. It is possible to reach his revelation much faster from the bad states than from the good states. Our egoism pushes us forward. From CabTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 1, 2019. Free will in rising above egoism. Question: if we speak about free will, it is clear we make decisions in our world, but it doesn't seem so in spirituality. The Creator leads us, and we must agree with him. How do we distinguish between free will relative to spirituality and corporeality? Answer: I cannot even explain this, because our freedom is in rising above our egoism. Free will is about the freedom from our egoism that forces us to act the way it wants us to, so free will is in ascending above it. In our world, there is no free will, of course, because we fully subordinate to our ego. Even if it seems to us that we have ascended above it and that we are already free, there is no such thing. There is only freedom in the gradual attainment of the attribute that is opposite from the ego, the attribute of altruism, when we ascend and become both greater egoists and greater altruists at the same time. A state of freedom appears in the intersection between them, in the middle line, in which we do not belong to either state. We are free of both the Creator, who is the attribute of love and bestowal, and from our attribute, which is hatred and receiving. By being between them on the middle line, we attain true freedom. It is a state that cannot be expressed because it is above the revelations of the forces and attributes on each level of the worlds. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 5, 2020. Kabbalah is not religion, but a science. Comment: many people look at Kabbalah as a religion. Others consider it a sect. My response: this means that they simply do not know anything about Kabbalah. Kabbalah is a science, not a religion. First, anyone and everyone can study it regardless of their origin. My students, who are representatives of different nations, live on all continents. If you take a look at our morning lesson, you will see people of all nationalities. Secondly, Kabbalah does not force a person to perform any religious actions. Kabbalists have no fetishes, sacred objects, or rites. It is simply the attainment of a higher sphere of our world and nothing else. Nothing else. When you comprehend it, you begin to feel eternity, perfection, the mutual inclusion of all in everything. You begin to change your worldview, your attitude to the world. This methodology shapes you, it makes you a different person. From Cab TV's program Meetings with Kabbalah, Victoria Bonia, March 29, 2020. How to cure egoism? Question: I remember myself in early childhood in the 80s. We swam in rivers and drank water from them. Flowers and berries in the forest smelled so strongly that their aroma was simply intoxicating. And today I see how everything has changed. Now these rivers are unsuitable even for watering cattle. Consequently, I have a certain feeling that we, our egoism, gobbled up this planet. What can we do to cure egoism? How can we correct it? Answer: in principle, this is not so difficult. We just need to want this together and support one another so that many thousands of people would gather together and try to act not selfishly, but above their egoism, using it as little as possible. And we do not need to do anything special, but first of all, just spare nature, stop robbing our earth. And secondly, to spare people, that is, treat one another with maximum understanding and friendliness. If we act in this way with regard to nature and man, we will call upon ourselves the positive forces of nature, upper light, as we call it, and it will correct us. We will become more friendly, open, trusting. We will be able to see through nature how good and evil forces interact with each other. And we balance them like plus and minus in electrical circuits. After all, it is impossible without the minus. We need to learn how to do this. My whole life has been dedicated to teaching people how to properly use both forces inherent in nature, positive and negative. The negative power is our egoism. It manifests itself everywhere and just burns us. But there is a positive force that we are not revealing. It can emerge only as we are awakened to it. If it, awakening, is not there, it, positive force, does not appear, and we remain under the control of only one negative force. As a result of this, we come to a state where everything becomes solely negative, inanimate, vegetative, animate nature, and man. From CabTV's meetings with Kabbalah, Victoria Bonier, March 29, 2020. Are melting glaciers dangerous for humanity? Question. Scientists say that the melting of glaciers can be deadly for us. Scientists from the United States and China went to Tibet, where the oldest ice is. Studying it, they found 28 different types of frozen viruses. And if the ice begins to melt, they will come to life. Now, against the background of the coronavirus, there is a terrible panic. Viruses are ancient and have been frozen for about 15,000 years. What will they bring to humanity? They say that it can be even worse than the coronavirus. Answer: it is quite possible. This is a terrible discovery. Maybe it will somehow cool down hotheads and, first of all, politicians. After all, everything depends on them. Question: how are politicians connected to the coronavirus? Answer: they are connected by the fact that they help the acclimatization of the Earth, AG1, to global warming and everything else. Let them throw billions at this. But, perhaps, they will still hear me, and then there will be no need to throw billions on the Earth, but they will instead educate the population and push it toward unity. Question: how is education connected to viruses? Answer: according to the plan of nature, we should already be getting closer to each other. If we do not begin to seriously get closer to each other, into one unified humanity, then, of course, we will face great problems. And it is not just the melting of the glaciers. We are violating the integral ecology of the Earth and of all the surrounding space. We are violating the ecology of the solar system. We do not understand this, but these are all closed systems that affect each other. First of all, us, the Sun, and the Moon. These are all interconnected systems that are so close, although it seems to us that they are far away, that there may be unpredictable consequences and very rapid ones at that. We have to think all of this over. However, to do this, we need different politicians, different leaders, and different ways of controlling the Earth. Consider what they are thinking about, only about how to remove each other from their places and how to reign for a year or two. For this they are ready to sacrifice the well-being of Earth dwellers. I do not know how to describe this so that it would touch people's hearts. Humanity could bring order if they wanted to do so. Question: why don't they want to? Answer: they do not want to recognize what is happening. They close their eyes. But perhaps they will now, with these kinds of blows, which will increase all the time. This is mandatory. And if they find an antidote to this virus, there will be even worse ones. And another antidote will make it even worse, and so on. Question: but you are not against the fact that they are looking for an antidote? Answer: no, I am not against it. I think it is stupid because you cannot do anything with it. You just go down the same path of mistakes and falls, all the time. That is not what we should be doing. We need to understand the source of our wrong attitude toward ourselves, toward nature, and toward people, and then everything will work out. Remark: humanity is looking for a means to stop the glaciers from melting and so on. My comment: what for? These are not the right tools, they are mechanical ones. Nothing is solved at its own level. We must always rise to a higher level. As Einstein said, do you want to fix something? You have to jump above the table if you want to land on the table. Question: yes, but how can they understand this? Answer: they should listen to Kabbalists. We speak in an absolutely reasonable, sensible, and empirical way, and we try to explain everything. Remark: what will make humanity closer to each other will not enter their minds. My comment: this is the greatest force of nature. It is because we express ourselves in this way, on the human level, and we try to make nature as integral as possible. And then nature begins to balance itself on all the other levels. After all, what is the reason for the entire problem? It is due to the fact that everything is out of balance. If people, at their own level, begin to create this balance, we have been out of balance for a long time, which is clear from our relationships, then all the other parts of nature will automatically begin to come into balance. Question: what will we have then? Will the viruses that came for death come for life instead? Answer: of course. Everything will be balanced. They will work normally, as they should. There is nothing bad in nature. It is we, at our level, who violate the harmony of interactions between the forces of nature, and therefore nature manifests itself at lower levels in such a way. Volcanoes, hurricanes, and viruses are all natural phenomena. But they are already beginning to manifest themselves at the level of biological phenomena. And then they will also exist at the human level. That is, humanity will suddenly stop understanding what it is doing and where it exists, as if it were under the influence of some kind of drug. And there will be nothing you can do with people. They will be walking around like they are switched off and doing some weird, terrible things. Someone will think of pressing some button in a nuclear power plant. Question: does this mean that the problems have risen to the human level? Answer: of course. They gradually rise from below, just as water rises and floods all levels of a human building. Question: you are a person of exact science, but it is very difficult to hear you. The politicians will not hear you. Then, who do you address? Answer: the people. I do not address politicians at all. There is nothing one can do except through the awareness of people. Not politicians, they are programmed by nature. What people want to happen, politicians implement. We need to wish that people will want the right goals, and then politicians will act. Politicians do not hear anything. The main thing for them is to be in power. If they hear that the people want it, they will say and do what the people want. The main thing for them is to be in charge. Question: what should people want now in order to suddenly change the politicians? Answer: the people must want to be connected among themselves in a good connection. We need to think about what to do. Because if this develops naturally and egotistically, then, of course, it will be bad. We need to urgently correct the tendency of nature, to turn it in the direction of agreement and mutual connection. Then, everything will be balanced. We have no way to escape from viruses and other organisms of some kind. These are all biological organisms. We need to develop all of this for the better. If we turn toward the better, they will not do us any harm. On the contrary, they will participate with us in a different type of development, a civilized one. Remark: to life. My comment: of course. Therefore, it all depends on man. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, February 3, 2020. What does nature want from us? Question: what exactly does nature want from us? What should each of us change for a better future? Answer: we are in an integral, global nature, as if inside a ball. The whole system of nature is interdependent and is in a certain internal balance. And we humans are specially created as egoists. We constantly disturb this balance in ourselves and in the fields surrounding us, the inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human. The problem is that despite the constant development and work of our egoism, we must reach a state where we fully balance the ego, make a restriction on it, the so-called symptom, and then use it the other way around, for bestowal, for proper communication with each other, when everyone consumes only what is necessary for himself. Today, any regular person in a society makes money, has a family, children, home, work, and lives normally. One does not need too much. By his actions, he should not harm the environment but plan them in a way that they are in balance with the outside world, not in a constant, petrified state, but in dynamic equilibrium. If a person behaves this way, then it is good for him and good for the world. He begins to feel and get acquainted with the system of nature through this world, what formula it works by, what kind of forces inside nature that controls everything. This upper force is called the Creator. In principle, nature deliberately created us so opposite to our equilibrium so that we would begin to feel in our development how much we do not correspond to it. That is, to the Creator, how much we can change, and how to be closer to nature, to the Creator. At one point, we begin to comprehend this force that controls us and wants to be in balance and communication with us all the time. Here lies the purpose of man's existence, to reach the level of connection with the general force of nature called the Creator. When we reach it, we will feel that we are in the state of the highest comfort, knowledge, eternity, and perfection. We must come to this state. Therefore, the virus that we are now awakening and which in turn is awakening us, exists precisely so that we can find the right interaction with nature, come to equilibrium with it, to the revelation of the Creator, to communication with Him. Question: how can you feel and realize balance with nature? After all, everyone has their own vision of this. Answer: you treat everyone as yourself. This is the best. If we relate to each other like that, then at all levels, inanimate, vegetative, and animate, everything will be in order. We will be in dynamic equilibrium with the world around us and begin to feel through it the higher management system, the program called the Creator. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 5, 2020. The Spiritual Role of Women, Part 4. Man and Woman in Spirituality. Question: can both receiving and bestowing develop in a woman in our world? Will a woman who knows how to receive for the sake of bestowal be harmonious? Answer: if men and women are separated in our world according to an external biological attribute, in the spiritual world, it does not matter at all. In the spiritual world, in each of us, whether a man or a woman, a soul is formed from the desire to receive and the intention to bestow. Therefore, you can be the spiritual male part, that is, the giver, and your husband, life partner, can be the female part. Then you can switch places depending on your efforts and conditions. This has nothing to do with the physiological gender. If you want to work spiritually with your husband, then you are already a group. A group is a minimum of 2 people and maybe 10, but no more. In the group, everyone gives and everyone receives. Therefore, everyone plays the role of receiving as a woman, called the female part, as well as giving, called the male part. And this also has nothing to do with their gender. So all this is very conditional. In our world, the difference between a man and a woman has a strictly fixed idea according to purely physiological characteristics. And in the spiritual world, I can turn from a man into a woman and from a woman into a man in 1 minute. It all depends on how the egoism is manifested in me and how much I can rise above it. I wish you all to be spiritual men and to remain beautiful women in the corporeal world. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 8, 2020. Kabbalistic terms, soul. Question: where did the term soul come from? Answer: the term soul comes from the word neshama. There are 5 states of the desire in Kabbalah similar to the Creator: nefesh, ruach, neshama, haya, and yehidah. Nefesh, ruach, and neshama are states that we can reach and constantly stay in. The highest of them is neshama. Therefore, this is the name of our spiritual part. In addition, there are also states called haya and yehidah. But these are supplemental, temporary additions to the state of the soul. From K5's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 17, 2019. New Life 1226. The Teacher as a Beloved Educator.
thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman.
Hello, everyone.
And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about education. We'd like to ask about the perception, the concept of education in the new world that we're entering in the post-coronavirus era. On one of our previous shows, we talked about the result that an educator, that a teacher wants to get out of that group of children that he's responsible for in the classroom is to give them the ability to connect with other children, other people in a good and beneficial way, and not in a competitive or violent way like we see, unfortunately, many times today. So this is where we want to go. Now I'd like to ask about this from different perspectives. How do we get there? First of all, I'd like to focus on the image of a teacher, an educator. They interact with a group of children that they teach. How can a teacher nowadays cause this group of children that he's responsible for to love him? He has to be honest with them. Honest and straightforward. Then the children feel that he's a friend. They also have to feel that he's an adult and that he protects them. They have to feel that he's wise, that he teaches them both out of being wise and great and an adult and a protector. This, first and foremost, he has to treat them. It's like a little child. As he grows up, he first of all feels his mom. Mom protects and saves, raises, takes care, does everything in different states of weakness that the child's in. This is what the teacher has to show the child, that he's next to him in order to supplement for all of the child's weaknesses. This first and foremost. And then the child feels that the teacher is what he needs. And then he's grateful for it. He loves him. He's tied to him. He's really devoted to him. Wants to be his friend, like with a big brother. This is one thing. And there's more to it. Upon this, he already builds the relationship, a more advanced relationship. Can you give me some advice as to how to build this kind of feeling among the children, in that group of children that I'm teaching, that I'm educating? How can I, as an educator, help build this kind of atmosphere, relationship between them? If it's a classroom like you have today, where children come to the classroom, then the teacher has to really show them that he physically cares for them, like a mother, to help them do this and do that, like a big brother, like someone that loves. And you don't need lots of words for it, but to simply invest in it a bit, to help a child a bit, do something, even if you touch him, like you touch a friend, in a good, nice way, like with a small animal. A child feels it, calms down, and will be expecting it.
ברור.
הפסיכולוגיה פשוטה.
ברור. איזה כישורים
אורן, איש חינוך? What qualities, skills does a future educator need in your eyes? What will make an educator successful? Rav, he needs to show the child a nice attitude and gently build this attitude so it'll be dependent on the success of the child as much as possible and in the child's efforts according to the child's abilities. It all depends on this relation that is very gentle here. It could be that 5 minutes is easy, but it could be that for the other, it feels like an hour. We don't understand what it feels like. It needs to be very differential here in that it's individual for each and every one in the way that they feel their efforts. Each and every one should somehow build a machine, a device that can compare between the children. And then we could see the numbers and see that the numbers are equal. But inside, one sat down for an hour and reached 30% success, and other sat down for 5 minutes and reached 80% success. But on this device, on this board that we have that can show the numbers, we see that they're equal. Oh, and what kind of goals, future goals does he need to have, this new educator, Rav? That we cancel scores. The ranks, the scores, these are really destroying people. They are placing people on a level of pride that takes advantage of others. We need to demand only, and I already spoke to you about this, we demand only their efforts in good relations. We want to complete each other. That is the most needed profession in society. How can I complete society? Oh, and so the goal of each educator is to cause each and every part in the group that he's educating to have this goal, how I can complete others? Rav, yes. Oh, okay, so that is the goal that we are striving for. Rav, yes. Oh, and give me a practical way to start this. How do I take a group of children and somehow bring them closer to completing the society, how to complete each other, how to invest in each other, because we can see a child only sees themselves and only their success, only their achievements. We aren't teaching them what is success. Oh, and what does that mean? Rav, it's not success that I succeed in being greater than others. That's an egoistic success. We need to teach them to be on a different track. The success will depend on how we build good relations. The children really want this. It's not that we are destroying their ego. No. We only want to show them how to use their ego. So it depends on how we build relations that are good between us. How do we build these good relations between us? How do we do it so it'll really depend on this? According to how much the friends need him and how much he needs the friends. Like a commando group. Oh, and how do I create this in a group of children? not according to exercises, tactics. Oh, and to give us an example, Rav, there are some exercises we can do that don't depend on our success of being completing each other, of working together. Rav, I'm not entirely familiar with each and every one of these things, but there are things like this where you play a game that you need to complete each other. These social games. It can even be competitive, but it needs to be competitive of group against group. By succeeding, wanting to succeed against other groups, then we have to connect together. We have to help each other. Otherwise, we can't succeed without this correct connection in our actions. And so we can succeed against the other group. What do you want to show? What do you want to show the children that will be a result from this? That without cooperation we can't succeed? What do we want the child to feel? But the child needs to feel that success depends on connection. We see today that nothing can be successful without connection. Even scientists that you know really within connection and by sitting down and just thinking, and I don't know how exactly, but you have these groups of scientists that are coming out today that are really big and great, that aren't even just hundreds, but they're even thousands, and then they succeed. On. We live in a world where we measure success. You're considered a successful person, a wise person, a strong person. It doesn't matter what parameter, depending on your abilities. It could be something that you're born with, certain skills. It could be that you worked on yourself and developed this. But on the bottom line, you are measured according to your achievements, and the one next to you according to their achievements. How can we create within this class of students a world of qualities that is opposite to that? You previously said that we want to completely cancel grades for the individual, but the group will be measured not according to my individual achievements, but according to the good relations between us. Rav, this is what nature is demanding from us. Nature is demanding us to connect together between us. And within the connection between us, not that I am important, or not that you are important, but the connection that we create between us is called the soul. And the soul is the inner revelation that happens in the connection between people. It's not in each and every person, but even within just the 10, within the 10 people who are connected together between them, and what's discovered between them is called the soul. Oh, and what does this have to do with the class of students? Reverend, we somehow need to teach them this. Okay, so what does an educator need to know in regards to this? Reverend, what's most important is that we want to be as one man with one heart, that we are connected together and we care for the connection between us, that there's nothing more important than the connection between us. Oh, and why? Why is there nothing more important than the connection between us? Why is it more important for me to achieve something individually? Rav, when we reach connection between us, then we feel that there, in this connection between us, something that's above this feeling of reality. There's something more elevated, more upper, more higher in value. Something that really feels complete. I don't know how to exactly express this, but it's a very important feeling that we want to pass on to the children, because the soul does not have an age. So already from the age of school children, they can feel for what purpose they were born. And so the educator has the goal of leading the children that he's educating to some kind of experience that's social, that's cooperative, that's very deep in the way it's felt that the group is what? What are the children meant to feel in the group? Right, that what they're missing is just a connection between them, a connection between each and every one. How does this educator lead the children that he's educating towards feeling this sensation? I hope I'm understanding this correctly. I want to check this here. Is there something that they can only attain in the connection between them? Rav, take them to a football field that you really love and tell them that they will get a grade. Yeah, they will get a grade only if they succeed in playing together, mutually cooperative. Let's say you have 5 or 6 judges that are watching the game, and they're only looking for the integral game, the connection in the game, the mutuality in the game, how each one is really enjoying how everyone's bringing the other into the game equally. And only according to that, the game will be measured, judged. There's no goals, there's no goalkeeper. There's a field, and there's a ball, and 2 groups. And we're checking how much these groups that are playing with one ball are playing between themselves in a very friendly game. Oh, and I didn't understand. Technically, how does this happen? I don't understand. There's no goal. We don't count the goal. We're not counting goals. We're not counting the goalposts. We have these 2 groups. We need to give grades to each and every group. Let's say the 10 minutes are over, however much time, and you say that this group, this first group, has this goal of 5, and what are we doing in the game? If there's no goalposts and there's no goalkeeper, then what's the point of the game? Raf, the connection between them, how much they're working together, playing together, holding the ball together, how much they're really playing between themselves in an integral way, and the other group cannot break them up, that they can't even get the ball. How much they're passing the ball onto each other, that they're really caring for the harmony between themselves. Okay, so we are measuring the cooperation and the completeness that they have, how they complement each other. Okay, so will this mutuality of the group as a group and not as individuals not lower the motivation for me as an individual to participate? Well, God forbid you feel that you're part of the whole, that you're playing with them, and you have the will of everyone working together. You have the pride of everyone. Do you know what this is? People are going to really I feel as if they're dying up inside if they're not doing it. That you're really willing together to go and do everything together. So what does it depend that I will not be lazy and leave the interactions for others to do in the group? And you know, I will go and do my own thing. That I'm not putting in my entire effort because I don't feel it as individual, as personal. Rav, no, there's no such thing. Rav, as an educator, how will you cause me to want to participate like this? Rav, this happens everywhere. It happens in the army, it happens in gangs, it happens in soccer, it happens in all of these things, that if you have a group, and you, as the force of the group, will be felt, even greater, and people will go and complete each and every action in the spirit that's even greater than what they would do individually. Oh, and how do we build as educators this gathering of children that come to us in the classroom, and how do we give them the feeling that it's really a group and not individuals? Can you give us an exercise, an example of practically doing this, Rav? We have one goal. Oh, and what's this one goal? Rav, it doesn't matter what goal it is. It's something that we start to respect. That's first. And second, that it's important for us to do it together. We want to be together. We want to understand together, to really use all of what we have together and to win together. This is what each and everyone can feel, that they really feel that they're dying up inside by not being able to do this. You can feel this in the army. Talk to psychologists, they'll also say that this happens. That it's not really good to die for the country, but that each and everyone feels that they have a group, they have this squad, they have this platoon that really gives them life. And that's the way it is in each and every place. Oh, and how can I build this in a group of children that they'll really feel this mutual feeling in a group? Well, this is something we need to start to do, and, you know, we can find it. Oh, and I understand that we can have this in the army with a group of soldiers that they're really fighting together. Well, you cannot leave the friends behind. You feel that you cannot throw them aside, that you feel that you can't disrespect them, that you have this inner pride, this personal inner pride, that you are willing to die for them. Oh, I would still like for you to give us the first step in that direction. I understood the direction, it's very clear, but let's go back to where I am right now. I'm an educator of a group of children. And the first step, how do I start to lead them to this feeling? Well, I need to think about this. I don't know. Right now, it comes slowly. Like in the army, that you get to it slowly. It's from these competitive games that I was talking about. One group against the other group. But in each and every group, you are playing for connection. And this is something that we don't have in a normal football game. In a normal game of football, everyone plays for themselves because they know that he will get $20 million for each game. This is how we're living right now, that we measure each and every individual. And this is not good. We are measuring how each one wants to enter this integral game. Oh, and this emotional experience that you were talking about earlier, that each and every one will be, you know, this top, the best, I don't know, the most, the smartest, the best, and he can't, but how do we cause them to feel that they won't be able to get to it on their own, but it'll only be from the connection with the students around them? You call this connection integral. What will the educator, the teacher, be able to show the children that they'll really feel this in front of them? What are they aiming? What are they trying to get to? How can he get to this? Well, the educator has to bring them to this great excitement to live in society, to be part of it, that only from living part of the society they can feel themselves as alive. They feel themselves as human when they're with others, and when they fall from this feeling of society, then they feel themselves as falling to from the degree of speaking to the degree of animates. Now, this feeling of society, what exactly is this feeling of society? What exactly do they need to strive for, Rav? To feel that life is only in connection between us. That if we gather all of our inclinations, all of our feelings, all of what we're trying to experience together, then this point that we want to connect, even if it's successful or unsuccessful, but this inclination will be felt as alive. We want to live for this. This connection sounds very, very deep in what needs to happen between the children. It is very deep because it is coming from another form of life. We are ending this program in a few minutes. Can you give us one exercise that each and every child can do when they're not with connection in connected with others, so that they can start to develop this feeling with others? What can I do? What can I give them so that they'll be able to start thinking about others until our next meeting in the group, so that we can increase this deep feeling of connection? Can you imagine yourself as a child? Owen, yes, of course. How good and how pleasant it will be to have a great big brother who's wise and really devoted to you and always standing behind you and wanting to help. Oh, and so that's the way they need to feel one another? Each and every society needs to feel that way. So what are they thinking about? What are they thinking about? What does each and everyone think about? So that each and everyone feels that they have a society that succeeds in each and every way in this way, and that they relate to each other not as an individual but as a society, as a group that they are in, and that their group is the strongest, is the best, is the most successful, and by that he is proud of the group, of where he is, and it's worth living there in that group. Oh, and thank you very much, Rav Lightman, and thank you, all of you. We are living in a new society, Chaim Chadashim, a new life. Thank you very much, everyone.